Welcome to CXO Chat. This is a show where top C-level executives from around the world share their inspiring success stories and leadership advice. Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Jason Dumois, your host of CXO Chat. This morning, we have a very special guest on our show today. He is the CEO of Collective Technology and is actively involved in understanding the needs of their global customer base, building a world-class team, and driving an agile and innovative culture. He has over 30 years of successful experience in business and technology leadership roles, including three previous CEO stints at Visible Technologies, Talisma, and Captura, all that were based in Seattle, as well as executive sales positions at IBM and Lotus Development earlier in his career. I'd like to welcome our guest, Dan Vitrus. Hi, Dan. Welcome, and thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be here.
Great. Well, you have quite the bio. So you've worked as CEO in several companies there in Seattle. You're currently the CEO of Collective Technology. This show is all about sharing your inspiring story, So I would like to start out by learning a little bit more about what you're currently doing at Collective Technology as CEO, and then if you could go ahead and tell our audience what you did to work up to that role, and kind of maybe go ahead and talk about some of your stints at the other companies you were running.
Okay, great. Happy to. So this is not a lot different than the three previous companies. We've got a global organization, and we are an enterprise SaaS company. We host in the Azure cloud today. That doesn't have to be exclusive, but it is where we decided to put the technology a few years ago. The use case, the problem we solve is we offload bandwidth constraints for large enterprise companies in their local offices around the world so that you don't have to buy hardware at the edge when you're streaming video, in particular, live and on demand. We share the file as it comes into the office. It's called peer-to-peer. That technology has been around for a while. Some people have used it legally. Some people have pushed the envelope with it, like Napster and BitTorrent. We're not anything like that. We're highly secure. We pass all the InfoSec reviews. We've got the biggest companies in the world using us. And as I said, we can offload the network in many cases up to 99% with a cloud-based solution that doesn't require any hardware. What we've been doing, at least recently, is surviving through the pandemic, obviously, surviving through one of the toughest economies a lot of people have seen for quite a while. In some cases, younger workers have never seen what's happening right now. I have, because I'm old enough to remember 2009 and 89 and 99. So we are heads down, very conscious of everything we do from an execution and a spend standpoint. And luckily, we have a strong technology platform that is being adopted by large companies. I think the most important thing I would say about Collective is we are the most global 105 employee company you'll find, I think, in the world. We've got people in EMEA. Wow. We've got people in APAC. I'll be in Australia all of next week, meeting with the team there and partners and customers. I'll be home for our Thanksgiving and then off to London for a week to do the same. And we obviously have a presence across the Americas. So what allowed us to survive over the last couple of years is we are a global company. And so as one part of the world was shutting down, in many cases, another was opening back up and then vice versa. Now we're seeing a resurgence of what we call the hybrid workplace. And that means people are coming in a few days a week and they're all using video. So example, this is a video call. 3 years ago, this would have been a phone call or a conference call. I have a Polycom speaker sitting behind me on a chair that I don't think I've used now for over 2.5 years. There's just no need to do conference calls when you've got such an interactive solution as video, whatever the platform is, Teams, Zoom, et cetera. So we are pivotal in making sure we power those live and on-demand events for these big companies, and that the experience is as good as television. I'll take a breath there so that you can maybe ask a follow-on question.
No, that's great, Dan. So this is very, very interesting technology that you guys are running over there. And you know, the fact that you're small, did you say you have 105 employees?
Yeah.
Wow. And spread out throughout the world. Like you said, you know, some parts of the world shut down while others were opening back up during the pandemic. So I guess, you know, what I would like to ask, you know, here, love your technology, love what you're doing. So if you could dig a little deeper, you know, kind of in layman's terms, you know, what exactly, you know, so you power live and on-demand meetings, right? So, mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're partnering with the Zooms and the Teams of the world. How does it work? You know, sure. just for the common folk out there, I just, yeah.
No, that makes total sense, that question, because there are a lot of video technologies and we are not two-way, we're one to many. So when the CEO of Intel recently announced that they are going to cut over $10 billion of cost out of the organization by 2025, including, unfortunately, layoffs, we were behind that, making sure that all those employees received that message real time and flawlessly. And it's challenging. It's very challenging to do that. So the way it works, the most simple explanation is, assume that at 9 o'clock on the West Coast, 12 on the East Coast, 5 in the UK, there is an all hands meeting, a monthly all hands, quarterly, or a special CEO announcement. And you log on to that and you are the first person in your branch office, and your branch office could have 100 people, it could have 500 people, it could have more than that. When the video starts, the live video actually begins, we download and cache that file on your machine unknowingly. Nobody uses all the CPU power that they get today in desktops and laptops. Those are like mainframes were 20 or 30 years ago. So we take advantage of the unused CPU power that everybody has. And when we cache it on your machine, we start to break it up and send it to other people in the office, your peers, hence the peer-to-peer terminology. That stream only has to come in one time to the branch office. If you didn't use Collective and 100, 500 or more people wanted to view a live event in that same vein by just clicking on a meeting request, the stream would have to come in as many times as there were viewers. It would absolutely crush the network from a buffering latency standpoint. And so we offload that because we take that file, we break it up, we put it back together instantaneously, and we create what's called a mesh network inside the branch office. The same happens for video on demand, especially if there's a live event that you've missed and many people are traveling, they're at the doctor's, they're on vacation or holiday. And so if you want to watch it 2 days later, 1 day, 3 days later, you're going to have the same constraint watching VOD as you would a live event, because on average, less than 50% of employees view an event live. And so the other 50 or more has to make that up in a VOD experience. And peering also is a great way to offload that network. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. So I guess just thinking, you know, like probably anybody else out there that doesn't know your technology that's behind the scenes. So, you know, if you're using Zoom, right? You know, I know some big companies might, you know, everybody gets on a all hands call Zoom, right? And let's say, you know, 200 or 300 people get on the call. What happens if a company didn't have Collective? I mean, can't Zoom by itself still support 300 or 400 people on a call at once?
It depends on where they are in the world. I can tell you that there are certain parts of the globe that just have still they're constrained from a bandwidth standpoint. So if you're in Midtown Manhattan in one building, you don't need us. But if you're a global company, you've got a presence in China, parts of Asia, the Middle East, even parts of Europe. So those are the people we serve, the ones with global offices. Our typical customer has at least 10 branch offices, 10.
Okay.
Wells Fargo has 8,000. All right. Just to put that in perspective. Okay.
Okay.
Who's a long-term customer of ours.
Sure.
You need more than one office. You need a global footprint where you could, if not are constrained by bandwidth. And so it's not necessarily just, I want to run a meeting with 100 people. When we do events, there could be 30, 40, 50,000 people attending simultaneously.
Got it.
Now,
okay.
The flip side of that, in today's hybrid world, Microsoft and Teams, those events are happening all day long, and they're happening multiple times a day, and they're overlapping. So now I'm in an office with 500 people or 200 people, pick the number, and I've got 10 Teams meetings going on at the same time. That will constrain the network as much as one large all-hand meeting with 20 or 30,000 people. So we're seeing the always-on, everyday. Go ahead.
No.
So basically, it's not just preparing for the once a month or once a quarter all hands meeting or the quarterly earnings call. It's preparing every single day. And now in a hybrid world, most companies don't know who's coming in on what day. And so is it a Wednesday and everybody decides to show up and there are 50 Teams meetings happening at the same time? So this is the world that we live in now, and I don't think it's ever going to go back to voice only. As I mentioned earlier, video is the new document. It's the new message. And so now you look at how people work day to day. It's not just preparing for a once in a while event. Those still happen. You have to have white glove, you know, like experience. That does have to come off like television, as I said earlier, especially when a C-level is communicating either positive or not so positive news to their employee base. But the other half of that equation is everybody on using some kind of video application multiple times during the day.
Wow. Now, this is really, really powerful. So just to recap, so your ideal customer has multiple branches, like 10 plus branches, and they're spread out globally, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Different regions of the world.
And for example, we have a way to solve for getting video behind the Great Firewall of China. That is not a trivial thing to do. And we have a lot of customers in the manufacturing, healthcare, financial services sectors that all have a presence in China. To move content in China, like video, at scale and securely is exceedingly hard. And we have found a way to do it.
That's amazing. Dan, congratulations on that feat. That's incredible.
Congratulate the engineers. It wasn't my job to do that.
Right. It's a teamwork, right? Your whole team. Congratulations to Collective. So, well, great. Well, this is, I love your story. I love your product and what you're doing now. So tell me then, obviously this podcast again is, sharing, not just what you're doing today, but kind of let's backtrack. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, Dan, when you were a younger guy and, working your way up the ladder, because a lot of folks want, we have a lot of listeners who are right out of college. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some are who are, just mid-level, senior level in their career, and they want to, potentially move up to an executive level position. So can you share kind of your success story on, what you did to kind of move up that ladder? I mean, obviously, you weren't always CEO of all these different companies that you just mentioned, and, you had to work in other positions to move up. And what was kind of your secret to success for you to actually get companies, the boards and all that to entrust for you to be the CEO of those three companies I mentioned when I introduced you, plus Collective? Tell me your whole story on how you got there and what's your secret to success?
Sure. I don't know if it's a secret. I do think, like many things in life, it was appropriate timing and some good luck, and taking advantage of the opportunity when I was given it. I do not have a technology background. I jokingly tell people I have a degree in science, only it's political science, not computer science. And I'm from New England originally, and there was a time when the greater Boston area was considered the mecca of tech before even Silicon Valley. And so I was just fortunate coming out of school in New England to be offered a position with a very large tech company. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I ended up in their contracts department. That didn't exactly get me excited enough to want to pursue it as a career. There was an opportunity to enter into a sales training program there that was a six-month sales intense training program that you went into knowing that if it didn't work out, you didn't have a job at the end of it. So you gave up the position that you were in and you basically bet on your future. And thankfully, I had some great instructors who were very, very accommodating, tolerant, worked with me. I stumbled a couple of times. They picked me back up and I get out of that program and went into a sales position down in Philadelphia. Enjoyed that, got recruited out of there by another Boston company that was just starting up, a software company. The first company I worked for was more hardware, which was, you know, in vogue back then. This other one was software, and I really thought that was the future of technology, and got lucky and got hired there, and then had a good 7 or 8 year run with them, and moved to London, came back to Boston, out to San Francisco, up to Seattle. I think now these are days when you had to move in order to advance your career. So I'm dating myself,
right.
But
no remote work back then, right?
Not even close. And we wore suits and ties every single day.
Oh gosh.
So, but
they don't wear suits and ties anymore. It's all, you know, I've heard some folks, especially in the Valley, you know, they show up to these board meetings with shorts and a t-shirt.
No, I've seen it all. And I still own a few suits when I go to London and Sydney next week and other places. But anyway, I think the one thing that allowed me to advance was being willing to move and take the next opportunity, whatever that was. And there was risk associated with it, like there always is, but it also allowed me to get a global perspective. Living in the UK when I was in my late 20s, reading the Financial Times, not even knowing what that paper was before I moved there, you know, thinking only the Wall Street Journal spoke the truth, right? Well, not really. Right. There are other publications in the world that are as good, and nothing wrong with the Wall Street Journal, but from a global perspective, the FT, you know, it blows it away. So learning that, taking advantage of cultures, wanting to build in different parts of the world, and then came back to the States and was recruited into a startup where the founder wanted someone to help her with a sales and marketing and business development background. Came in as the chief operating officer. I was probably, you know, like a lot of founders, she made it sound like the ball was on our 20 going in to score. And it was really on, or their 20. It was really on our 20-yard line. We had more like 80 yards to go. So that's fine. You know, it was a good way to learn. And the board and the investors asked me to become the CEO. I will say, case in point, in all three companies prior to this, I took over for a founder, and I am exceedingly proud of the fact that, you know, we still communicate, you know, at least in a couple of situations, it was never adversarial. That is a hard thing to do, to be brought in to take the reins from somebody who started something. I have a ton of respect for any founder. And I also jokingly say that, you know, I'm not smart enough to start a company, but I'm dumb enough to run one because it's a different skill set altogether.
Right. Right.
And founders, I mean, they just are cut from a different cloth and they have a never say die attitude. And I feel like I can compliment them from that standpoint. But many technology companies are started, you know, with a very product and engineering focus, as they should be. But at some point, it needs to pivot, at least from my perspective, to a very customer sales focus. And the balance of both is ideal. But if you're not going to listen to your customer and you're going to build what you want. And yeah, Steve Jobs got away with that for a long time, but he's one of the few people that pulled that off. Otherwise, you need to be out in front of customers and channel partners and prospects and listen to what they want from your technology. And that's what I think I bring to the table, as well as a network of people around the world that I've worked with previously that we can call on, whether that's in Singapore or Sydney or London or Bangalore or Bangalore, as they call it these days. So I always felt like my interest in a global business was an advantage, especially for small tech companies that are VC backed, where many times the investors tell you to focus on North America only and dominate that market before you consider going anywhere else. And I just refuse to do that. And with cloud-based technology today, the world is your oyster. You don't have to worry about, you know, opening up in EMEA, the Europe, Middle East, Africa market when it's hosted in a global cloud. So it's not like it takes any more work other than hiring good people. The technology plays no matter what part of the world you're in. It's not like you're pressing a CD in a different language like you did 20 years ago. So hopefully that helps. And I just was fortunate, again, to run that first company, exit out. The same investors asked me to come in as the COO of the second company. That was a little more challenging, but eventually the founder and I saw eye to eye. I ran that one, and then I was brought in by yet another VC firm in Seattle to run the third company, always with the thought process that I had a ton of respect for the people who founded the company, but trying to get it from sub 5 million to 50 plus million. That's kind of my mantra or my sweet spot, and then finding an exit for it at some point. So again, I don't take it from zero revenue, but you know, maybe a few million and America only focused to, you know, a lot more than that and a global footprint whenever possible.
Wow. Now, you know what? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a founder. I've been a founder of a couple companies before, Dan. I hate to say it, a couple companies that unfortunately did not make it. One of those statistics where they say, what, 9 out of 10 tech startups fail.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, at least we tried. You know, I'm a go-getter, I'm a hustler. Right. And like you said, it takes a special person, you know, to be a founder, right? We all have different skill sets, right? You know, I'm just one of those go-getters, like, hey, if it fails, it fails. At least I tried, you know. You know, I'm willing to take that risk and I love it. You know, I might start another company, you know, someday. You never know. And now I know who I could have to run it once I get to sub 5 million.
Well, I don't know about that, right? But I'd love to help in any capacity. And as my career winds down, I'd like to get, you know, more involved at the board level.
The board level. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about the tech community, and especially the investors. And I would say this to any VC firm, you know, if you look at the background, they're exceptionally smart people, you know, all of them that have been very well educated, but not a lot of them have real operational experience in running something. Certainly not multiple times as a CEO. And I'm not bragging, I'm just saying, you know, there's a whole different world that exists when you're in charge of payroll and people's careers and lives and income. And so if you've never felt that pressure, it's really, really it's tough, and you don't sleep at night because of that.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, I really like your story, and you know how you're the guy who came in, you know, it was sub five, you know, you helped build it from sub five to 50 plus million, take it to an exit. That's amazing. You know, I can tell you, you know, a lot of founders probably, you know, some founders can do that. They can stay and do it, but you know, I don't know. I don't think I would be that person, honestly. I'm the ideas guy, right? Yeah. So I'd come in, you know, maybe get it up to a million or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I would need a, you know, guy like you to say, hey, you know, here's the reins. I'm going to give you the keys to the castle. You know, it's a different skill set, you know?
Well, and ideally it's a co-pilot, not just somebody taking over completely, as I said, with
exactly.
the other
guys. Right.
Because again, they have a skill set that I don't, and I'd like to think I complement that at least occasionally.
Yeah. No, definitely. No, definitely. You definitely have something there that a lot of us don't have, Dan. So, all right, let's move on here to another question or two here. The next question I have for you, let's see. let's talk about building teams. Okay. So obviously you've come in with lots of, in several of these roles, as CEO, and you got to build the team, right? So you get the funding, you come in to run it. You got to take it from 5 to 50 million. How do you build A plus teams?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I rely on my network, as I mentioned earlier, and I'm exceedingly lucky to have people come in that have worked with me before. As an example, the chief revenue officer of this company is based in London, and we have worked together in all four companies that I've run. There are multiple people here that I've worked with twice before, three times, mostly in the field, related positions, mostly in sales, solution architects, systems engineers, those kind of customer facing roles, because that's where I came through in my career. And so I would always rely on people I've worked with before that I felt would complement the organization. I also am a huge believer in team sports, or just competition in general. And I feel like that one of the best ways to learn how to work with others is either in the military, which I've never served, but we have people here that have, and I've worked with others that have in the past, or that have played team sports at a competitive level. I'm not saying every employee has to have that background, but I do think that the more you can intertwine that in your culture, the more that you see the organization strive for the greater cause, for lack of a better term, to want to win for the team, to not rely on personal accolades and the such, or as such, I should say. So big believer in working with people that have worked with me before that want to take, the challenge again. And big believer in those that have had to work in a cross-functional, diverse organization. I mean, I don't think we would have any of the problems we have in this world, if not this country right now, if everybody served in either the military or played, played a team sport where it doesn't matter where you're from, what color you are, where you grew up, what school you went to. That stuff is irrelevant. And it's great to have smart people. We're all smart in tech. Most people that I work with are smarter than me, but it doesn't really matter if you can't get along with each other.
Right. Now, that you make a good point, Dan. I mean, it's all about teamwork. And, and I know the military is, they're really good at building, building that teamwork from the day of boot camp. Right. And, professional sports or any sports, right. And having that. I mean, I agree. If we've been in that environment before, I mean, I think this world would really be a lot. Let's play as a team. Let's not be separate, try to fight against each other all the time, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. So, I got one more question for you, and then we will start to wind down here and wrap up your episode this morning, Dan. So, the other question I have for you, the last question would be, what advice do you have for folks who desire to be in your position one day?
I touched on it earlier. It's not about relocating anymore. Although if somebody gave you the opportunity, particularly to live abroad, I don't think there's a better way to advance your career. I think it's the equivalent of an MBA to understand different cultures and the way people think and act. And, all you have to do is go to Europe to know that the same phrase or the same slogan in one country that you're using to market your product could offend somebody in another country. There are a lot of things you need to pick up on when you sell outside, and everyone's in sales. I would say that we're all in sales. Right. We're always selling somebody on something, right?
Sure.
And so I would take an international opportunity at any chance that you have, if you have one. And along the same lines, I would take risk, take another position with the organization, or take another position with another company, which I know a lot of people do to advance their careers, but don't necessarily make it the same thing where it's repetitive, where you're not learning as much as if it was different. Not to say I could never jump into an engineering role because I don't have that background, but I know I could do a lot more things in a tech company than just sales. And if you have that chance to round yourself out, I think that makes the best leaders at the end of the day, ones that have a multidisciplinary experience from various functions within the organization.
Yeah. So, you know what, you just hit on something that's near and dear to my heart is education, right? Learning and development, training. My background has been in the learning and development space over the years, you know, previously. And, you know, I was back, you know, I built an e-learning company, you know, all about, you know, online training and all that. And, you know, one thing that I like is you had mentioned earlier about sales training, right? You know, take a class, right? You know, increase your skills. I mean, I think you sound like you would agree that we never want to stop learning, right? If you can increase your skills and, you know, get certified in sales or whatever it is, right? Different disciplinary, whatever you're interested in, and just fine tune your skill set. I mean, that is one way to move up, right?
Well, there's no question. And it's so easily accessible. I mean, I mentioned the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review. I read all those publications. I am on multiple distribution lists to advance my learning in so many ways. And one of the things that we did here just a few years ago, somebody gave me this book called Accelerate. And it is a really interesting piece because it was written by some consultants that actually followed a Portland, Oregon-based company called Puppet Software. And it was their journey from waterfall development to agile. And I don't want to get super technical here, but agile is the way that you communicate more effectively. You do stand-up meetings every day. Now, during COVID, we had to do those via video. But now we ship software every 5 weeks in what we call sprints. I know this has been around for quite a while, but it's taken many technology companies a lot longer to adopt that. And so that book was an epiphany for me. And it forced me to think about my leadership role, not just relying on engineers to do this, because we had a lot of pushback. Anytime you ask someone to do something different, you know, there's a good chance they're going to be resistant, at least initially, until you explain why. So in adopting the agile technology here, we lost some people that couldn't move with us mentally. They were smart enough, but they couldn't make the cut because it was it was such a different way of doing things. And that book had such an impact on me that every single new employee reads it here. Everybody. This is not an engineering book. This is a business book. And if you want to understand, now the younger generation has grown up with Agile, but not everybody has. Waterfall was the way we did this for years. You know, you write code, you throw it over the wall. Somebody else tests it. They send it back to you. You do a major release a year and a minor release every 6 months. Well, those days are over. As I mentioned, every 5 weeks, we're producing high quality output here. And so to me, that book is a testament to wanting to learn and think outside of the box. I didn't have to do that. People don't have to learn more than what they do on a daily basis in their specific roles or responsibility, but I decided to embrace that and make sure everybody else in the company did as well. And it's made us a much better organization for it.
So reading books like Accelerate, right? That's one way for folks to, you know, to get ahead. I'll have to say, I've read articles, Dan, from very successful, you know, executives, entrepreneurs, you name it, like Mark Cuban. I heard a story where he would just, like, the night before a meeting or the day before, he would just read, understand the tech jargon. I mean, he's a sales guy. He didn't necessarily understand the tech, but he knew it. He just studied it so much when he was in the boardroom, you know, he could kind of semi get around by talking their language. It's just, it's amazing, right?
Yeah. No, I totally respect that. And I've had to do a lot of that myself. As I said, I'm a sales guy at heart. I jokingly tell people I'm not a CEO, I'm a CFO, chief selling officer, because I'm always selling somebody on something.
Selling your ideas, selling your business. I mean, we're all on sales.
Selling
right?
your culture, selling you know, everything. Selling people to come back to work and come to the office in a few days.
Yeah, that might be the hardest sell you'll have to do, right?
We don't have a problem with that. People are very productive here. If they want to come in, they do. If they don't,
right.
They don't. I'm well beyond that.
No, and it's, you know, CY9, as you know, we're in the staffing industry, Dan, you know, technical recruiting, IT recruiting is our specialty. And, you know, it's hard. You know, we have been trying to sell our candidates on why they should take a job that's on site or hybrid, right? You got to go in 3 days a week. You can work from home 2 days, but they're like, well, I already work from home now. Why the heck would I leave a job that's 100% remote to go to a hybrid model? I mean, again, to your point, maybe it could be an advancement in your career. It could take you to the next level. So,
absolutely. How about just getting to know your colleagues at a different level? How about going out to lunch with them or having a beer at the end of the day or, being in a conference room? And, you know, a lot happens when the meeting is over, in the video meeting in a conference room. It's the next 10 minutes where you're sitting there talking when the camera's off. Those are invaluable times.
Right. Yep. You have that time after the meeting, you have the water cooler talk. Yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, come on, who cares about the water cooler talk? But you know, it's important.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it is. I think it builds a tighter company. But again, I understand the challenges and it's not going to happen overnight.
I agree. All right, sir. Well,
okay.
That should do it. We can wrap up now. I would like to ask, how do our listeners get a hold of you? You know, let's say they really liked your story. They want to follow up and ask you a few questions. You know, maybe someone is interested in engaging you in Collective Technology, your company. Maybe they like, wow, this was an interesting company. They would like to do business with you. How should people get a hold of you? What's the best way?
Well, there's two ways. I'm on LinkedIn and I check that religiously. So you can always drop me a note there. And then my work email address is dvetras, V-E-T-R-A-S, at collective.com. And just remind people, collective is with a K, not with a C. Dvetras at collective.com or via LinkedIn.
All right, Dan. So, well, I appreciate it. I will go ahead and like to thank our guest today. Everybody, thank you for listening in to Dan's wonderful story. And again, Dan, thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being a guest and have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Jason. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to today's show. If you were inspired by today's success story, please share this episode with your network. To listen to upcoming episodes with other inspiring C-level executives, please follow CXO Chat. Inspiring success stories, leadership advice. This is CXO Chat.